So let's get right into it.
You sound so excited.
I'm tired. Had a rough week this week. Let it be. Welcome to another edition of the Long and Whiny Show. This week we're doing Band on the Run. But first, let's talk about the passing of Leonard Nimoy. What a big shock. Or was it to you?
Well, I'd seen that he went into the hospital the day before suffering from chest pains. So as soon as I saw that, it's like, uh-oh. So I started thinking that maybe something worse would happen since he is getting on in years. Although, really, he's not that old. He's 83, so, you know, he could have had 10, 15 more years.
Yeah. I was pretty surprised. I mean, I knew he had COPD, but he showed up in the last Star Trek movie, you know, for a bit cameo.
I'm trying to forget that he was part of those two movies. Just like I'm trying to forget those two movies.
Well, it's kind of sad he won't be involved in next year's 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
So Band on the Run. This has got to be a departure from last week's album for you.
Yeah, I actually made it through this one all in one sitting without cringing, without having to take a break.
So how'd you like it? I know you've heard it before, but...
I haven't heard it as much as you think I have. Just like I was saying last week, I've had the album in my music library for a bit, and I've just been listening to the few songs that I know, basically the songs that are on Wings Over America.
Uh-huh.
Because that's the only CD that I have. The earliest CD I have of McCartney is Wings Over America. And all the rest of the stuff I've kind of bought by digital downloads just recently, the last couple of years.
Okay.
So that's basically been my exposure to Band on the Run are those... four or five songs that are on Wings Over America.
So as a whole, what'd you think? Because you promised last week you'd have something negative to say.
Yeah, I've got a few things. Well, my biggest complaint is that I can't get into his lyrics. And I'm really surprised when people find meaning in his songs, because to me it's just a bunch of nonsense lines strung together. There are a few songs that are complete, that you can actually look at them. You can look at the lyrics, print it out, and go, okay, this tells a little tale. This actually makes sense. But most of the time, it's just like just sentences that are just put together to fit the melody. Random sentences put together to fit the melody.
Well, there's one song that comes to mind off the bat for that on this album, so we'll get to that. But... I mean, did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah. It's got great songs. So I enjoyed that part. But I'm listening to it like a critic now that I know I have to review it. And you were talking about the meanings of songs last week, and I'm just thinking, how are you getting this? Because I'm just hearing a bunch of nonsense phrases. So I'm actually paying attention to the lyrics, and I still can't figure out what half the songs mean.
Well, I guess that begs the question. Did you go back and listen to Little Lamb Dragonfly?
Yeah, I did, and that's part of the reason why I'm on this diatribe, because I don't get it. I can see why you'd think that the little lamb is George and the dragonfly is John, just as an overall concept, but once you actually get into the lyrics, it just doesn't make any sense. Plus, during the dragonfly part, Paul contradicts himself, like every couple lines. The dragonfly flies by his window in the opening.
Yes.
Then it's by his door a couple sentences later. Then he's complaining that the dragonfly never comes around anymore. And it's like, well, no, three sentences ago you said it flew by your window.
Well, I think it's all metaphorically. You know, he used to be closer with them. Now he's not. He doesn't see him much anymore. I think it's all metaphorically.
Yeah, I understand it's a metaphor. It's just... there's no follow-through with it. He's just got this general concept. He can't... There's no consistency.
So you didn't have any new breaking news on the song itself? You didn't like it anymore? Or... lesser.
Yeah, I could say I didn't like it anymore, but I do like it. But going into the lyrics didn't help me appreciate the song anymore. It just kind of irritated me more. But I still like the melody. It's a great sounding song. I mean, it's a nice sounding song. So I still like it as a song, but I just don't get it as a message.
Because I think John got something out of it. But maybe because they're more in tune with each other than we are with them. I still think it's a pretty damn good song.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's get into this release. Band on the Run came out in the U.S. on December 5th, 1973. Not too less than a year after Red Rose Speedway, and this is just a total flip of the coin from the last album, you know, as far as songs and overall album material. I think it's a pretty flawless record. But we'll get into it because I'm expecting you to give me some kind of negative feedback here. So let's start with the first song, Band on the Run. This is a classic. Starts out slow. He's going in, you know, talking about stuck inside these four walls. And then we get to the guitar kicks in, and he's saying, if we ever get out of here. Then we get the big orchestra piece, the acoustic guitar kicks in, and then he says, well, when the rain exploded with a mighty crash as we fell into the sun. This is just an epic song. I think it's perfect. It's awesome. Dave Grohl, by the way, does a great cover of this. I think it's a great vocal by McCartney, and he's doing his rock voice again, which we haven't heard in a while. Big thumbs up. This is a great song.
I read that the If We Ever Get Out of Here part is based on something that George Harrison said.
I read that this morning.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of George in this song. Yeah, it's a great song. I like the way it kind of builds into the main part of the song.
Right.
It's more successful than the big, expansive medley that ended the last album. So this is more like it, where it's just like little snippets. And they're catchy little snippets, too.
Absolutely. It kind of follows the structure of Uncle Albert.
Yeah, but there's more variety. There's more... Uncle Albert is more layered because there are just more pieces to Uncle Albert. But yeah, it's kind of like John's Happiness is a Warm Gun, where it's just like three parts that are strung together to form a song.
I'll agree with that.
My opening complaint, not on this song, but on the album as a whole, is the version I have, which I think was the 2013 remaster. Doesn't have a lot of bass. And I don't mean bass guitar. I mean the, you know, bass treble. The bottom of the album sounds like it's missing. Because I really thought it would be like a heavier sound to it. So there's my opening complaint.
Yeah, I have the 25th anniversary release that I listened to, and I thought it sounded pretty full. That may have been an issue with, I think you have the 2010 remaster.
Oh, is it 2010? Okay.
Yeah. So that is a complaint, not on a song area, but on a remastering.
Yeah, it sounds really good. Otherwise, it sounds great. It's really clear. It's a great recording overall, but it just sounds like one of those albums from the 80s. It's just it's mid-range and treble.
Yeah, that's not cool. But overall, you're giving this a big thumbs up, I'm assuming.
Oh yeah, the song gets a big thumbs up. Obviously, it's one of his biggest hits, solo-wise.
So before we get into Jet, I forgot to mention that most of the other lineup from the previous album is now disbanded, and it's just Paul, Linda, and Denny Lane taking much of the work on this album, recorded in Nigeria, and finished up at Abbey Road Studios, right? Was the overdubs done at Abbey Road?
And some of them, I don't know if they were done in Abbey Road. I thought it was done at Air Studios, George Martin's studios in London. But I think a lot of the album was done, it started in Lagos, and then, no, it's Lagos, sorry, Lagos. There are two pronunciations, and I'm getting confused between the two of them, but I think Lagos is the more popular one. But the album was finished up in Air Studios in London.
So McCartney gets mugged at knife point, and loses some of the recordings along with a bag full of lyrics while making this album. So I mean, a little turmoil happening. I guess the government obviously was not very stable, and I don't thinking looking back from the Man on the Run book, he's pretty much said it probably wasn't a good idea to go there.
Yeah. And the studio wasn't in very good shape either. It was an EMI studio, like an official EMI studio, but it was basically a shack, like a two-room shack.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that this whole album came together from that mission. Mm-hmm. So the next song is Jet. This song is obviously a big rocker. I like how it kind of thumps along like a jet. I think this is a perfect song as well, just like Band on the Run. These are two punches right away in this album. Good background vocals, I think, from Denny and Linda. And the piano riff in there is a piano riff that's really good. Pretty good bass, and that sax solo is pretty awesome, too. Mm-hmm. This is a pretty good song, but the problem with this song is that it's so overplayed on classic rock radio that I don't listen to it as much as I used to. But I still, obviously, it's still a classic. On to your reflections.
No, it's a great song. I read that it was based on another one of Paul's dogs, just like Martha, my dear. But that makes no sense when you actually listen to the lyrics. But apparently it's based on a puppy named Jet.
I mean, the song doesn't even, like you were saying, I don't think this song makes sense at all.
Yeah.
But as a rock and roll song, it works. This song is 4 minutes and 6 seconds as opposed to Band the Run being 5:10. Bluebird is the first ballad on the album. What do you got?
I love this song. I love it. I could listen to this song on repeat for a whole day.
Wow.
I love this song.
I'm assuming this is a great Paul ballad, obviously. It's a great vocal. The background vocals, again, are pretty strong. The song just starts out really great from the very beginning. There's a lot going on in it. The sax solo is really good, and I like it, too. I like it a lot, too. He hasn't played it in concert in America in a while. I guess he was doing it on the European tour last time, but he didn't play it here. But yeah, this is a pretty damn good song. It's probably one of his better ballads. And it's definitely in the top 10 for his ballads. Yeah, this is a song that, I don't know, I mean, this album is pretty well known, but I don't know how many people really remember this song if they talk about this album. Don't you agree?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I think this song isn't remembered like it should be. I think it's great. I agree with you. I want to know, why do you think it's so great, though? I mean, you're giving it a resounding
view. It could be my number one favorite song on this album, and it's way up there on my list of favorite Paul solo songs. I just love it. I love the sound of it. I originally first heard it on Wings Over America, and I love that version, too, and this version is as good, maybe better. Maybe I haven't compared the two. I actually planned to this morning, but I didn't have time. But I am more used to the Wings Over America version, but this one's great. As it should be, since it's the original.
Absolutely.
I just read that they hired somebody to do additional percussion on the song, and they recorded that part of it in London, but by remarkable coincidence, the guy that they hired turned out to be a Nigerian from Lagos.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, so it's like Paul got in trouble because they thought that this British guy was showing up in Lagos to steal African music, and he was getting pressure from like gangs, musical gangs or musician gang, not musical gangs. That'd be West Side Story, but musician gangs were pressuring him and threatening him. And it turns out that the only African musician that they did have on the album was hired in London.
Yeah, there was, what was the name of that guy that was kind of, he was like the main reggae guy in Nigeria at the time.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have the book handy, and I don't know if it's on the webpage that I'm reading.
The man in question is Fela Kuti, whom the book describes as the self-styled tribal leader of the Nigerian music scene.
He invited them to the studio or something to listen to what they had done, and he agreed that there was no lifting there, and he let them go.
Yeah, it's not like, this isn't like Paul's Graceland album.
No!
He only went to Africa just for a different location. He didn't go there for, like, to be musically inspired.
Absolutely. We're going to skip around a little bit because I listened to this album all out of order. So let's get into Let Me Roll It. Another great rocker. The guitar is awesome. Obviously, Paul sounds great. This is a great live song. The lyric, I can't tell you how I feel. My heart is like a wheel. I don't know. It's probably simple and simplistic, but I like it. Let Me Roll It to Ya, you know. The bass is good too, and the Paul scream there in the near the end is awesome. That's always good. The lyrics obviously are a little thin, but I don't know. I still like it. I can't complain much about that. It still rocks. What do you got?
Yeah, it's a good song. It's got a really big bluesy bass and a really cool raunchy guitar sound. I was kind of taken aback by the really cheesy organ that starts the song.
Yeah.
It didn't sound like something that would be used in a professional recording studio. It sounded like something you'd buy it at back when they had Wurlitzer stores.
There you go.
But, overall the song is great. That said, it's not one of my favorite I understand why this is a big hit, but taking that into account, it's still not one of my favorites.
Wow.
Like, if you were going to take the 20 best solo McCartney songs, this one would be at the low on the list.
Oh, yeah.
It just doesn't grab me. I'm not saying overall low on the list. I'm saying if you take the 20, 30 best Paul songs, this wouldn't be one of my favorites.
Well, it's probably not one of mine, too, but on the album, I love it.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Now, we're going to skip to an additional track I don't think was on the UK release from what I'm reading, but was on the US release. Hell and Wheels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Would this have been the last song on the U.S. album?
I think it was in the middle between Let Me Roll It and Memonia.
Okay, that works better. Because if it was the last track, it kind of spoils the way the British album ends.
That's
good that they stuck it inside someplace.
This is another rocker. The bass sounds great. The drums are good. It's good to sing along to. The guitar is great. Obviously, the vocal's awesome. I like the play on words with hell on wheels and hell on wheels.
Yeah.
I love the end when Paul says to the band, which is only two other people, say bye-bye, and then the guitar just kind of rocks out and the song just kind of fades out.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. This is a good jam.
Was this based on... Was this like Paul's car or van or truck or something?
I think it was a car he had, yeah.
Okay.
Hell and Wheels was the name given to their Land Rover, also seen in the previously discussed Life magazine cover. You're welcome.
This song, it's a rocker, but it just doesn't have the really heavy rock sound that I would have expected.
I think overall this album pretty much rocks, though.
Mm-hmm, yeah, especially compared to the last couple.
Well, yeah, that's for sure.
Paul had a nice nap and was ready to come out fighting.
We're going to just jump into Picasso's last words. Like I said, I heard these all out of order, so my notes are all messed up here.
You need to create playlists or something, or number your tracks better.
Yeah, I need to. Next week, we won't have that problem. This song is cool. I mean, it's a good drinking song, obviously. That's what it is. But the background behind it is interesting, too. I guess Dustin Hoffman and the McCartneys were at some dinner party, and he challenged Paul to write a song, and something was on the paper, and Hoffman grabbed it, and Paul then wrote the songs all around Picasso's last words, which were, drink to me, drink to my health.
you know I can't drink anymore.
That being said, I think that's pretty cool.
It was Time Magazine, actually. And they were in Jamaica because Dustin Hoffman and Steve McQueen were shooting Papillon.
Oh, well, that's kind of interesting, too.
And Paul happened to be vacationing in Jamaica and met up with Dustin Hoffman and Steve McQueen. And Dustin Hoffman invited him back for dinner. And Paul was saying, Dustin Hoffman asked him, where do you get your songs from? And Paul says, oh, I make stuff up when I, you know, whenever I'm inspired by something. And so Dustin Hoffman got the article from Time Magazine, and it was the April 23rd issue of Time Magazine from 1973. It had an article titled Pablo Picasso's Last Days and Final Journey. And it included the quote. And so Paul got his guitar out, started strumming, and came up with the melody. And Dustin Hoffman was just floored by it and yelled to his wife, come on, get over here, you have to see this. And Dustin Hoffman said that apart from watching his children being born, it was the greatest moment of his life.
Wow, that's that's pretty cool. The French interlude in there is a little different. Then it goes into like a little jam session. We get a Jet reprise.
Yeah, with a really cheesy percussion background.
Yeah. But
they're turning into a Holiday Inn hotel band.
And then he kind of says, I'll be waiting for you, baby. And then they all sing kind of drunk. And then it ends. And then we get a Mrs. Vanderbilt reprise there as well. Mm-hmm. This is just an epic song. It may be a little too long, but I'm going to forgive it because I like it overall.
Yeah, Paul said that they were just throwing pieces together just like Picasso would, and they were trying to create an art piece just by adding stuff to it. And the different parts of the song are supposed to reflect the different phases or periods of Picasso's output.
Well, that's kind of interesting, too.
Yeah.
So what did you think of this song?
I agree it goes on too long, but I kind of like that it includes stuff earlier from the album. It kind of gives it a feeling of cohesion.
Yeah, I like that too. That's probably, I don't know, I like it overall, but I do agree it does get a little long. But I'm willing to forgive that because I like it.
And the clarinet and bassoon remind me of Laurel and Hardy music because those are the instruments that they used to use for Laurel and Hardy.
No, man, that's kind of cool too.
Yeah, the clarinet would be Laurel and the bassoon would be Hardy. And the French interlude part was a recording from a radio show. I think it was a radio show called La Flash Touristique, hosted by a guy named Pierre Lesève, who died in April 2009, and he had trouble getting paid for his contribution and eventually ended up being paid £5.
£5?
Yeah.
Yeah, McCartney's notoriously cheap, so.
But the site I'm at, it has a lot of reader contributions, reader comments, and his family members have written in saying how great it is that their dad was is part of this album because now they can listen to it and hear his voice.
Yeah, that's cool too.
Yeah, it's cool. You don't think about that kind of stuff, but
no.
Cool.
All right, we're gonna jump right into one of my favorite songs on the whole album. Ironically, the last song, 1985. This song is freaking awesome. I've always liked it. I love the piano. I love his voice. He's just pounding away on that thing. Just can't get enough of that sweet stuff My Little Lady Gets Behind is a, yeah, I don't know, it does, it's silly probably, but I just love this song. I like when the song breaks down and they're all kind of ooing and then they thump right back into it. The bass is just awesome too. The guitar rocks there for a while too, and then that Paul scream at the end is fantastic. And then we get another kind of Band on the Run reprise and kind of ties the whole album together really nice. This is a fantastic song, and I was first heard him play it live when you gave me the copy of the Apollo show that he did several years ago, and he kind of pulled this one out of his ass, and just I was surprised he was going to play it.
One's for the Wings fans.
And it sounded great then too, and it sounded great at Comerica. This is just a great song. I love it. Big thumbs up.
That's great.
What do you think?
Well, it's good. I like it. The story behind this is that Paul had the phrase in his head, "No one ever left alive in 1985. That's all he had, but he wanted to put it in the song and couldn't figure out how it would fit. And eventually he came up with that melody.
It's great. I mean, it's great. The version on one hand clapping is also very good, too. I recommend listening to that. That's a good version, too. This song is just awesome. I guess we're going to go back now a little bit and fill up the rest of the songs we missed. Mrs. Vanderbilt, what do you got?
This is supposed to be inspired by the Vanderbilt family, although
it's
spelled differently. Paul drops the R in his title.
Oh, yeah, he does. You're right. When I wrote it out on my notes, I spelled it with the R. That's cool. I've never noticed that. What did you think about the song?
I like the sound of it, but it really doesn't have much to do with the Vanderbilts.
No, it doesn't.
So... And also, the opening line is supposed to be based on a music hall comedian, Charlie Chester, who had a radio show. And there was a regular chant of "down in the jungle, living in a tent, better than a prefab, no rent." And from his serial show, Tarzan of the Tapes. And it's also because of that comedian that the song ends with that fake laughter, that fake laugh track.
Yeah, this is a good jam.
But the "down in the jungle, pay no rent" thing made me think of "You Never Give Me Your Money." That's what I thought of.
Yeah, I never thought about that, but yeah, I can see that. Did you like this song overall, though?
Yeah, I do. I like the hey-ho part. That's probably the most memorable part of it.
Yeah, to hear 30,000 people chanting that at Comerica Park was surreal.
Oh, yeah, I bet it would be.
This has a great, I thought, a good bass line. The lyrics, I like the hey-ho part too. "Leave me alone, Mrs. Vanderbilt." The sax in there, it works. "No use in worrying." I like that. The guitar breakdown in the middle is cool. The drums actually sound pretty good. They're fast. Fast beat to it. This is a cool song. I always liked it. And I think it holds up real well. This is a classic to me. I mean, I like every song on this album, but I like other ones more than others. This is definitely one of the ones I really like a lot. I guess we're going to finish up then with the Mammonia No Words combo. What did you think of those? These are probably the slower two songs on the album.
Uh-huh.
What'd you think?
I like Mammonia, but No Words is a lot like Red Rose Speedway. It just washed right over me, and it didn't have any lasting effect at all. I even listened to it again just to remind myself what it was, and I still don't remember the song.
Well, let's get to that in a minute, because I thought it was memorable for one reason. Mm. So, the Mammonia, nice, sweet acoustic song, good lyrics, good vocals from everybody. I like the sound of it on a whole. And he says something in the background near the end of the song. I think it's like, "I like that sound" or something. I don't know. I've never heard that before. Of all the times I've heard this, maybe because I was listening to it on earbuds. But that was kind of cool. And then we just goes into No Words. I like the orchestration on that. In the middle, though, when he just goes off on that burning love part, and he goes into this very high falsetto that would make Barry Gibb be jealous. I thought that was cool.
deep inside. You must sign high. You're burning high.
I like these two songs a lot. What'd you think?
Like I said, I don't remember no words. I know it's co-written with Denny Lane, and yeah, it was written before Red Rose Speedway, but wasn't recorded till Band on the Run.
So that being said, it's kind of weird that it kind of fits so well with Malmonia, because there is no break in between. They go right in, they slide right into each other. That's kind of cool. So what'd you think on a whole, though, between the two? Other than we know that No Words you didn't think was that memorable.
Yeah, I can't say much about No Words. Mammonia, I swear it sounds just like another song, but I can't remember what it is. But that whole Mammonia, Mammonia repeating sounds so much like some other song that I've heard.
Something, another Paul song or another?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. But I can't place it. But I get a feeling of deja vu when I listen to it. And apparently the name is based on either a house or a hotel that they stayed in at Lagos. But the house or hotel has an O with, along with the U, but Paul drops that along with the Vanderbilt R.
Why do you think he dropped that R?
He probably doesn't know how to spell Vanderbilt.
You think it's that simple?
Yeah, I do. I was thinking maybe it's for legal reasons, but then it's like he probably just doesn't know how to spell Vanderbilt. He says it so quickly that he doesn't pronounce the Vanderbilt part of it. He just says, yeah, Vanderbilt.
That's true, yeah. All right, well, that's it. What'd you think on a whole of this album? Give me something. I didn't hear a lot of negativity, so I'm assuming you enjoyed it.
Well, yes, compared to the last couple albums, this is a breath of fresh air. It's nice to hear Paul actually inspired with songs to record before they go to the recording studio.
I agree with that.
So, and it's obvious that he was very inspired by it, and he inspired John Lennon, too. When Lennon heard this album, he was so inspired by Paul's output that John started writing songs again.
Yeah, this is probably, I've read over the last couple of days that this is the best selling of all the post-Beatle works, and it's Paul McCartney's most successful album.
Yeah, you can see why. It's got a ton of great songs on it. It's almost, I mean, almost every single song on here is a big hit.
And I think next week's album, Venus and Mars, I think that's a really good record, too.
Yeah.
I mean, these two albums together are really a good 1-2 punch.
I was looking at the track list of Venus and Mars since it's next, and it's all on my computer screen together. And I was thinking, yeah, I might actually...
There's two.
I might actually like Venus and Mars more than Band on the Run.
Wow. Well,
but that's just because of Wings Over America. I'm basing it just on that. But I think that I actually might like Venus and Mars more than Band on the Run. Although Band on the Run is great, I have nothing against Band on the Run.
Yeah, it's a Band on the Run and Venus and Mars together. They're the 1-2 punch for Wings. Of course, they'll have a whole new lineup for Venus and Mars, and we'll get into that briefly next week. And then that will launch into Speed of Sound, and then he'll tour on the strength of these three records, because you're not going to hear anything off Wildlife on the Wings Over America tour. I don't think he plays anything off Ram either, does he?
Maybe.
And then there is one song from McCartney, which is Maybe I'm Amazed. Nothing from Ram.
Yeah, it's surprising. I thought there would be.
So, yeah.
And surprisingly, one song off Red Rose Speedway.
Which is?
My Love. Yeah, obviously.
most of the track list for for Wings Over America is populated with Venus and Mars and Band on the Run. And some Beatles songs, obviously, that he did. And then he does Hi, 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 and, you know, some songs off Speed of Sound. There's a memorable live version off Wings Over America for Speed of Sound, which we'll get into in the next couple of weeks. I don't want to spoil it now, but it's one of my favorite rockin' McCartney songs. That's kind of cool, too. That's a cool album. Wings Over America is a cool album, and I think we'll touch on it briefly, but I don't want to do an in-depth analysis because it's mostly stuff we're already going to be hearing, but It's a great live album, that's for sure. How do you have this, on CD or digital download?
Wings Over America?
Yeah.
I originally got the CD, but I also have the digital download. This is the high-definition version of it.
How does it sound?
Great. Yeah. I mean, it's not exceptional because it's a live album, but so it, you know, the sound isn't as pure as recorded in the studio. But yeah, it sounds great.
And this is gonna be this whole decade of the 70s. He really just keeps coming out with album after album, and sometimes it succeeds and sometimes he doesn't, as we've already seen. So that's it. That's our Band on the Run recap. What did you, I mean, 1985, what'd you think of that song? I mean, come on, give me something. That song is just awesome. I just love it, man. And I talked to a guy that I do business with at work, and he's trying to learn how to play it on the piano. I was shocked when he told me that was what he was learning how to play on the piano. I said, oh, there's somebody else out there that loves that song as much as I do? So I thought that was kind of cool. Mm. All right, well, I guess find us in the usual places, right?
Yes, you can find our blog at thelongandwinyshow.com. You can email us at podcast@thelongandwinyshow.com. Find us on Twitter at twitter.com/longandwiny or on Facebook at facebook.com/longandwiny.
One more question before we end the show. I wanted to ask you, so we talked about maybe taking a departure for a week and doing a classic album. Would you be opposed to doing a Springsteen album?
It depends. What album are you talking about?
I don't know, maybe The River or Wild and the Innocent. And
those are the two that I don't have.
Well, they're on Spotify.
Okay.
But we could do Born to Run, too. That's a good album, too.
Yeah, because they just released high-def versions of those albums, but I don't have those two that you mentioned.
Yeah, I'm just trying to throw some ideas around. We'll talk about it in the coming weeks. Next week, for sure, we're doing Venus and Mars, because you can't do Band on the Run without doing Venus and Mars. So some of that album was recorded in Nashville. So we're going to go down to Nashville next week and see what Paul came up with. We'll see you guys next week. And same bat time, same bat channel. We'll see you later.